Good morning. I hope we all feel the privilege of being here this morning, that we take a few moments to forget the things of the world and worship our Lord and Master. You know, growing up, I had never had a desire to be in this place, up in the pulpit. And many of you know, not only my father, but grandfather and great-grandfather were all ministers. And that was one of the so-called vows I made, is I was never going to be a minister. I was not going to be in this position. It's amazing, though, that, you know, a lot of little things that come back that I remember that I never thought I would have remembered. But traveling with my dad, especially after my mother got sick, I came home from college a lot and traveled with my dad to help him drive on the weekends and things, and picked up a lot of things from him, just practical advice that he would talk about, usually as we were leaving a church, because it was fresh on his mind, and I'd drive for him. And he'd always give me little things that now come back, like I say, come back to haunt me now, little pieces of advice he'd give me. And I remember one time, leaving a church, he had finished early. I mean, he didn't take the full hour. He finished about 15 or 20 minutes before 12. And I made a mention. I said, you kind of cut it off short today. You finished early. And he'd always tell me, well, the things you got to know about your audience, you got to read them. Especially afternoon services were big with him. You don't carry an afternoon service too long. They lose their ability to hear and speak. One of the things he said, one of those things you always need to remember, and that's the kickoff time for the Dallas Cowboys. Always bear that in mind when you go into the stand on Sunday mornings. And he said, not one of those things we talk about generally, but he said, you need to keep that in mind. So I pass that along to you to know that my dad influenced me, so that any of you that are sitting a little uptight, you might relax a little bit. I'm in the book of Matthew this morning, and I have a short event here that takes place where Jesus is instructing us. I'm in the 18th chapter of Matthew, and all of you have heard this used at one time or another, or quoted one time or another. I want to go through it briefly and talk about it, and it's Matthew chapter 18, verses 15, 16, and 17. This is what's known as the part about discipline in the church, and discipline when we have a problem with one of our brothers or sisters in the church. And you'll hear this used quite often about how you approach dealing with those problems. And I want to speak to you about this. It's been on my mind a little bit, and I want to speak on it a little bit because I think it's one of those areas that is not necessarily misquoted but misinterpreted. And this is also one of those events in the Bible that is different from the King James Version than it is from some other versions. And I think this is a great example. I know there's many versions of the Bible, and I know many of the Lord's people have other versions because sometimes they're a little easier to read. And I have more than 100 different Bibles, everything from the Reader's Digest Bible to the Bible for Dummies, all those type of things. And I will use them occasionally if I'm having difficulty understanding. I'll go look and see what all of them say, and as it ends up, I end up disagreeing with most of them. Come back to the King James Version. This is one of the real benefits I think we'll see this morning in the King James Version of the Bible. How it treats this instruction here by Christ is different than the interpretation you will take from many of the other versions, and it's one good example. I know there's lots of versions out there that we've seen, and people get them because they're sometimes easier to read. They're put in modern-day language, and I understand that. But I have a strong preference for the King James Version because I believe it's not a version, it's a translation. It is an identical translation from the old Greek and Hebrew text. And they spent a lot of time doing it, and I'll talk about that more in a minute. But I know you've all heard this at Matthew 18 and 15 through 17 talked about from time to time, about what do you do when you have someone who trespasses or sins against you. And that's one thing I want to point out that is different about some of the versions. But real quickly, Matthew 18:15. Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. And if he shall hear thee, thou hast gained a brother. But if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he neglect to hear them, then tell it to the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. This you'll see this talked and discussed about is, this is one of the ways we handle disciplinary issues in the church. Part of this comes from the way it's interpreted and the way it's translated by others, various other versions, is that you'll see that it makes some changes. And of course, I have the King James Version, but many of the versions will go like this. Moreover, if thy brother shall sin, go and tell him his fault. They take it from a trespass against you to a general sin if he sins. That opens it up to all the worlds of sin. If I know someone is have a drinking problem or a drug problem or they're having a wrongful affair or if they're doing something bad, then I have a duty to go talk to them about it and make it a general sin of the church to address. This is one of the issues that I want to bring up with regard to what this involves, to what level this involves church discipline. And I think that this is one where the King James Version is especially important because of the preciseness of the King James language. Keep in mind now, what we're talking about here is an offense. I believe it's talking about offense between two individuals, between two brothers, between two sisters, and I believe that's what it's talking about, and I like the King James Version, its translation. If thy brother shall trespass against thee, a lot of them will leave out against thee. But if you look back, and I'm not going to go back, if you look back in just this chapter is talking about offenses between individuals. And over here in the first, Jesus talks about anybody that offends a small little child. It does that in the first five or six verses. Especially he gets verse 6 and says, but whosoever shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. And then he makes a general statement, woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses shall come. There's going to be offenses between individuals. We're going to hurt each other's feelings. We're going to say stuff sometimes we shouldn't say. We're going to have problems, and sometimes I'll say something that I don't intend as an offense, but it may be taken by someone to be offensive. Y'all know me. I'm a wisecracker and a joker and a practical joker, and sometimes I may do something that offends people, and it really hurts me when I learn of that, but I may not learn of it for a while. But that's what I believe is going on here. It's talking about offenses between individual people. And when you see this, this is one of the reasons that I prefer the King James translation is because it is so precise in its translation as to what the subject matter is we're talking about. Individual offenses between people. This chapter goes on, and just a few verses after this, Peter asks the question, well, if someone offends me, how many times do I have to forgive them? And we know it's unlimited. You're supposed to always forgive. That's one of the key things about the church. You're always supposed to forgive. And he tells Peter, not just one time, not just seven times, but 7 times 70, 490, 500 times, unlimited. You're unlimited in how much you forgive, no matter how much someone offends you. So I believe, again, the context of it is talking generally about offenses between two individuals that have problems. And we know, as Christ tells us, these are going to come. They come up half forever, and woe is to the church for that. But they're going to happen. It must needs be that offenses come. But woe to the man by whom the offense cometh. That's what we're talking about here. But what's important to me, first of all, is that we recognize a couple of things as we go back through this here in a minute. The importance of the King James translation or King James Version. We talk and joke sometimes. You've heard a joke about speaking the King's English. Well, over here in America, we don't speak the King's English. We speak an American version of English, and we can understand each other. But we know, if you've studied your history a little bit about that, you'll know the English get put out with us in America because we don't speak the King's English. We got lots of slangs and lots of words that we use and put together, and we're the worst in the world about adopting new words all the time and putting them in the dictionary that mean stuff. And we've got everything. If I said that was a Watergate-type incident, you know what that means now. You know, there's just lots of words we've adopted, and we're good about that in America. Over in England, those old people over there, especially in government and higher levels, they still enjoy and love the fact they speak the King's English. It's a precise language. It's very clear, and they have words that mean specific things, and they use different words for when they mean something differently. We have all sorts of words that overlap each other. I mentioned it about a year ago, I think, on a sermon about when it talks about two words that mean the same thing, or three words. I've spent the word ROW. It could mean the third row. It can mean there's a fight going on, and I'm saying there's a row going on in the third row. Both of those are R-O-W. And I say there's a row going on in third row where I row the boat. All those are R-O-W, but you have three different meanings of the same word. And that's where we are in America, and that's why we have to be careful, and that's why I enjoy reading the King James Version, is because it was translated precisely. And a lot of these new biblical interpretations will translate it, but they won't translate it precisely. Let me give you the example that I want to go with here. If I'm talking to Brother Kenny, me and I being the first person, that's I, me. If I'm talking to Brother Kenny, I'll say, you need to do this. I'm speaking specifically to him, you need to do this. But if I'm up here preaching and I want to say something to the entire congregation, that's still second person, but instead of singular, it's now plural. Second person, plural, and I'll say, you need to do this. And you have to read the context or understand the context I'm talking about, because I use the word you in both cases. That's not true with the King's English. They have different words for first person singular as they do from second person plural. Second person singular from second person plural. They use different words. And King James, when he had this translated by all the scholars that he hired, it was translated using the King's English. And it's very precise translations. And so when it's translated, the words in here have a specific meaning, and we need to look at that meaning. And when you have translations, again, you know, we don't get into this too often, but this is why it's important, the translation that you're reading, that you really understand what's being said. Look at this, because when in that example I just gave you, you in the United States can either mean singular or it can mean plural. We don't differentiate between the two. Now, if you listen to Jeff Foxworthy down here in the South, we say you and then we say y'all. They distinguish the difference. And if it's a big crowd, you say y'all all. And so, but as a general rule, we say the word you to mean singular, and when we mean plural, you. They don't do that in King's English. In the King's English, when it's talking about an individual, like Brother Kenny, when I'm talking to him, I use the word thee, or thy, or thine. You know, we use that word a lot when we're talking about it, when we're copying what we read and how we pronunciate. We use the King James English, and it's based on the old King's English. Speaking of individual means thee, thy, thou. It's a form of the word thee, thy, thou, thine. When speaking about second person plural to a crowd, it uses the word you. And that's where we got that. We don't use the thee, thou. We took you, but we start using it across the board wrongly. We use it for second person singular and second person plural. Well, the King's English uses thee for second person singular, and it uses you for second person plural. Now, when you're reading the Bible, if you'll apply that little piece of advice there, it'll help you a whole lot understand what's going on. So let's go back and read this, remembering that when he says thee, he's talking about an individual. When he says you, he's talking about the group that he's talking to. But in verse 15, moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, it's an individual offense. He's talking about only when he trespasses against an individual, another individual. It's not talking about sin in general. He's not talking about if somebody comes out and catches me drinking and drunk and they need to go report it or tell it. It's talking about when I offend one of you in particular. And that's what this whole chapter is about, personal offenses. Let's go back and read this now, and we'll read it through, and I want to point out a couple of things. This is how we resolve interpersonal conflicts. When you and I are having a disagreement, when you've hurt my feelings, what am I supposed to do? Moreover, in the first paragraph, moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee. Number one, if. It only applies when your brother has trespassed against you. Many times I'm offended because maybe what somebody said to me, and I'm going to go over and see him and I'm going to straighten him out. And I get over there and he starts talking to me and I realize, boy, did I misunderstand what he told me. This is one reason this first paragraph, 15, is so important that we follow the Lord's advice here. Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against you, you need to make sure that, first of all, that it was an offense and he committed it. And that's one reason you go to talk to him, is to make sure you clear it up. If thy brother shall trespass against thee, send him a text or write him an email. It's not what he tells us, is it? He says, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. It's a private meeting and a private conversation. Someone offends me, if Brother Kenny offends me, I'm going to go brother, tell Brother Darryl, you won't believe what Kenny did to me. I'll see Brother Ken, I'll say, let me tell you something else. I told Darryl this, look what Kenny did to me. I want you to understand that. Am I following this advice? No, I'm spreading gossip then, and I'm spreading probably falsehoods and tell-bearings about my brother here. Look what he tells us to do. If thy brother shall trespass against thee, go. Go do it face-to-face. Go see him and go privately and go alone. Rest of us shouldn't even know about it. If you're having a problem with somebody else, we shouldn't know about it at this stage at all. We shouldn't have a clue. Go address it with the person that bothered you and get it straightened out. That's what this is about. Most of the time, as we know, there's been a miscommunication. We know over in the book of Numbers, I believe, chapter 15 of Numbers, it talks about there's some sins of ignorance. And boy, that fits me to a T. I'm going to do a lot of things out of ignorance. Because, you know, I may make a statement that I don't think about. King David tells us in Psalms 19 about the secret faults that we all have. Help me, Lord, from committing secret faults, making offenses to somebody that I don't even know about. I'm not even aware of myself. And many times that's what's taking place. There are sins of ignorance and sins of, as David says, secret faults. And help me, Lord, from committing those secret faults. That's why you go talk to them, first of all, just you and him or you and her. Go talk to them directly and say, hey, I don't know what happened here, but it bothered me when you said this or when you did that. We ought to go talk to them one-on-one. That's the first thing he tells us. Go and do it. Go do it face-to-face. Don't go tell anybody else. Don't go blame anybody else. Don't go spreading it around. Go directly to the person involved, just you and him alone. It's a private meeting. Nobody else should even be aware of it. Nobody else should know about it. And it says, if he shall hear thee, now here's the reward, thou hast gained a brother or a sister. You've gained a brother if he hears you. Now, wait a minute. I've got a problem with Brother Kenny. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to win this argument. I'm going to tell him where he's wrong and I'm going to win the argument. If I do go over and if I win this argument, have I gained a brother? No. I may win and I may convince him, but he's a little irritated that I had to come over and argue and win. I would be, same way. The goal is to gain a brother. You ought to go over there not under the assumption that you're right and that you're making the right argument, but you ought to go visit with him under the assumption about, I want to be friends. I want to be close friends with you again. That's the goal. That's the goal of this, is to go to actually gain a brother. 99% of the problems would be solved with this first step. We wouldn't have to go to the next two steps. There's actually four steps outlined here. We wouldn't have to go to the next four steps, next three of the four steps, if we went and followed this first one correctly. Notice, first of all, again, it's a private offense between individuals. He said, if a brother offends thee, talking about singular, second person singular alone, and tell him his fault between thee and him alone, just the two of you, and talk through it. And don't go under the presumption that you're going to win an argument and win a fight, because that's not. You're over there to gain a brother. Not to create an enemy, not to tell somebody off, I'll show them up, I'm going to win this argument. You know, and I'm a lawyer, I like to win arguments. That's the wrong thing the Lord tells me. I'm not to go over there to do that. I'm to go over to gain a brother. Verse 16, but if he will not hear thee, if he doesn't hear again, talking singular, if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every word may be established. Now that's the Old Testament standard. Nothing can be proved except between at least one and usually two to three witnesses. You got to have several witnesses so there's no misunderstanding what's going on. So if that didn't work, if I didn't convince Brother Kenny on the very first round, y'all know I'm joking about Brother Kenny, but I'm using him as an example. If that doesn't work very good, I'm going to go find out two of my good friends. I'm going to go get Brother Darryl. I'm going to go get Brother Ken. I'm going to say, y'all go with me and help me, and we'll overwhelm Brother Kenny, and we'll convince him that I'm right. Is that why you go take two people? No. Again, what's the goal? It's to gain a brother. I don't go get two of my best friends who I know will take my side to go with me. It's not what you do. You get to go get two people whom Brother Kenny trusts. I go get two people who I know he trusts and he has got a lot of respect for and integrity for. And let them go and let them monitor our discussion. because I may be wrong. I may be the one wrong here, and I need to have somebody monitor that discussion so that they can give an objective standard and an objective lesson about what's really taking place here. We should take objective people, disinterested people, not people who I'm taking over so who can help me win my argument. Again, the goal is to win a brother. And we need somebody who hasn't been involved, who doesn't know about this, who can help, you know, more or less be a little bit of a referee. It's not really a referee, it's kind of a mediator. Help us mediate this. And that's why you do this. Is you take, verse 16 says, that's step two. He will not hear thee. Take one or two more with you. So then you have people who can not only witness the conversation, but can hear both sides of the story and give some disinterested counsel here. They're not going to tell one people what to do or other people what to do, but he might can say, you know, you might have misunderstood him. You know, they can greatly help moderate what's taking place here. Go on to verse 17 now. And if he shall neglect to hear them, again, it's very clear, if he, the offender, shall neglect to hear them, the two witnesses that you've taken with him, tell it to the church. Now, this is an area where there gets to be some different interpretation. And I hope I can show you that what was intended by the King James Version, in my opinion, and I've sought the advice and counsel of others as I studied this, of other ministers to get through this. Tell it to the church. And people read this and say, well, you're going to call them up before the church, we're going to do it in church conference. And I don't think it necessarily means that at all. But you bring it to the church. And I think you bring it probably either to the minister, or to the deacons, or to the small group. You don't have to have a big conference group. It's not what I was talking about. We're not talking about a formal disposition of the problem here. But you bring it to the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee. Doesn't say the church. This is where, again, I think the church is not yet a part of this last part. If he neglects to hear the church, you take it to a church because then you have people who understand the situation and can moderate a little bit. But this is not a church matter. This is not an offense between the people and the church. It says, if he neglects to hear the church, let him be unto thee, not the church, but unto thee. A lot of them will change this to you, and people say, well, that means the church. If this is the case, then he becomes a heathen and a publican to the church. It doesn't say that. It says, if he neglects to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. A heathen man back then was a Gentile, a non-Jewish person. It's like y'all have seen, you know, the Muslim today we hear on the news. Anybody that's a non-Muslim is called an infidel in their religion. At this time, the Jewish people called anybody that was not a Jew a heathen. Doesn't mean you live in caves or anything like that. Just means you were a non-Jewish person, the same as what we call today a Gentile. And that's what, and Gentile then was the term used later on in the New Testament. Heathen or Gentile or a publican. Now, what was a publican? Publican was a Jewish person who went to work for the Roman government, and a lot of Jews despised them because they were tax collectors. They were tax collectors for the Jewish government. They collected taxes for the Roman government. They collected taxes from the Jews and paid it in the Roman government, and they got to withhold a little bit so that they could live off of that. That's what a publican is. People despised them, just not a whole lot different than we would probably an IRS agent today. He said, if he neglects to hear the church, let him be unto thee. It didn't say unto it or unto you or unto the church. It says unto thee. My opinion, the church is not involved in this. They're to be like a jury. You know, and I put this like, you know, that's my world, is the world legal situation. You got a contract dispute between two people, and sometimes if we can't resolve it, we'll go to the courthouse and we'll get a jury that'll decide which one's right and which one's wrong, but they're out of it. They don't go out and try to enforce a contract. They may say which one's right and wrong. They just make a distinction between the two, and then they're not involved anymore. They've made a judgment, and they're not involved. I believe that's the same thing as talking about here. The church will come and make a judgment, but then the church is not involved, because it says here, let him be unto thee, not anybody else but you. After you've been these steps, you've tried everything you can. You've gone to him privately. You've taken two witnesses. You've taken it to a group of the church people. And if he still neglects to follow anybody, then let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. Now you hear this church, that this applies to the church, and we ought to kick them out and banish them from the church. That's what you hear so many times. We need to kick them out and remove them from the church. Because it says, treat them like a heathen and a publican. That's the way the Jews treated the heathens and the publicans. We know they didn't have anything to do with the heathens, the non-Gentiles, the Samaritans. Anybody that wasn't a Jew, they didn't have anything to do with them, didn't socialize with them, didn't eat with them, didn't have anything at all to do with them, and especially not publicans either. They hated the publicans. So you treat them like the Jews would, which means we'd kick them out of the church and not let them in, non-fellowship with them, strictly establish non-fellowship with them. That's what that would mean. But now, who's writing this book? Who's the author of this book? Matthew. Matthew, go back with me to the 9th chapter. Now, Matthew's writing this, and he says, Jesus says, you treat these people who offend you and don't apologize, you treat them like heathens, non-Jewish, Gentiles, or you treat them like publicans, tax collectors. Go back to Matthew 9, verse 9. Jesus is passing through, performing miracles here early on, right after he's not too long after he's been baptized by John the Baptist. Verse 9 of Matthew 9. And Jesus passed forth from thence and saw a man named Matthew. Matthew's writing about when Jesus called him into his service. Sitting at the receipt of customs. Matthew was a tax collector, a publican. And he saith unto him, follow me, and he arose and followed him. How did Jesus treat a publican? Ask him to follow him. Ask him to be one of his apostles later on. Verse 10, and it came to pass, as Jesus sat at meat in the house, behold, many publicans and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. Jesus sat down and ate with all these sinners and publicans. Now, how did Jesus treat the publicans? Didn't sound like he banned them and kicked them out, does it? Verse 11, and when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto his disciples, why eateth your master with publicans and sinners? And Jesus heard that, he said, they that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. But go ye and learn what that meaneth. I will have mercy and not sacrifice, for I am not come to call the righteous, but sinners unto repentance. I'm going to work and have patience with these sinners and these publicans. Go over one chapter to Matthew 10. Matthew 10, beginning in verse 1, we see this is where Jesus calls his people to be apostles. It says, and when he had called unto him his 12 apostles, he gave them power to cast out unclean spirits, cast out devils, heal sickness, heal disease. Verse 2, it says, now he lists the names of the apostles. Now these are the names of the 12 apostles are these. The first, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew his brother, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas, and Matthew the publican. James the son of Alphaeus, Lebedus, whose surname is Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot. Now look here, in one place, the only in this list, the only time we talk about who these people are, two names. The rest of me just list them by name other than the son of somebody. Matthew the publican. We go out of our way to mention that Jesus named as one of his apostles a publican. Down in the next verse, Simon the Canaanite. Canaanites lived outside the Jewish area. Many of them were Gentiles. He goes out of his way to mention those two. How did Christ teach? How did Christ treat the publicans? Named one of them his apostles. Sat down and ate with them and dined with them. Came to save them. Came to help them. Came to help those sinners and people that were lost. Go over into one more chapter in the chapter of Matthew 11. Matthew 11, Jesus is talking here. He talks about John the Baptist. And then Jesus is giving more instructions about why he came. Get on to verse 19. Matthew 11, 19. The Son of Man came eating and drinking. And they say, behold, the man is gluttonous because he ate and drank. And he's a wine bibber and a friend of publicans and sinners. Jesus says, because I ate with them, they're calling me a friend of publicans and sinners. This same issue that we just covered about Matthew a minute ago being called out is also covered in Luke. We talked about Jesus sat down and ate with these publicans. Go to Luke chapter 5, verse 27. After these things, he went forth and saw a publican. This is Matthew. No, also Matthew, Levi Matthew is his name. Saw a publican named Levi sitting at the receipt of customs. Again, it's the same story we read, but a different version. He said to follow me, and he left, rose up, and followed him. Verse 29, and Levi made him a great feast in his own house. Jesus went over and ate with this publican, ate in his own house. And there was a great company of publicans and others who sat down with them. And he went on, and the Pharisees has the same argument that was covered over earlier about, what are you doing sitting down and eating with sinners and eating with these publicans? You know, we find out that how did Jesus treat publicans? Didn't treat them the way the Jews treated them, did he? Jews treated them one day and banned them, kicked them out, banished them. But that's not how Jesus treated them, is it? Didn't treat them the same way at all. When you talk about the Gentiles, remember we talked about this about a year ago, the woman at the well in John chapter 4. She was a Samaritan, Gentile, because she was no longer completely all full-blooded Jew. And everybody asked, why are you even speaking to this woman? This woman says, why are you talking to me? You Jews are not supposed to talk to me. Look how he treated her. He gave her more wisdom and revealed more to her about who he was than anybody else. He treated the Gentiles pretty nicely. Even his other apostles showed up and said, why are you speaking to this woman? Remember over in Matthew 15 when he went over into along the Philistine coast, and that woman came to him, the little Gentile woman, Canaanite Gentile woman. She asked him for help, and he said, I'm not really here to help you. I'm here to help the lost sheep of the house of Israel, to help the Jewish people. She kept asking him, and he granted her everything, healed her daughter, and granted her everything he needed. First time he'd actually performed a miracle for a Gentile. That's how he treated the heathens, the Gentiles. Remember over in Luke chapter 18 when the Pharisee and the publican went to the temple, asked for the blessing. The Pharisee said, thank you, Lord, for not making me as bad as that publican is. And the publican threw himself down and said, have mercy on me. Which one walked away with a blessing? The publican. How did Jesus treat the publicans and the Gentiles? I want to go with me one more. Go to Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19, we have the story here of Jesus and Zacchaeus, I guess it is. Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was the chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And we're not talking about just a publican. We're talking about the head publican, the head tax collector. He sought to see Jesus. This was Zacchaeus. He sought to see Jesus, who he was, but he could not because the crowd was too big, and he was a short man. He couldn't see over the crowd. That's what we're told in verse 3. So he ran ahead and climbed up a sycamore tree so he'd get up in the tree and see Jesus when he walked by. Jesus came by in verse 5, looked up and saw him and said, Zacchaeus, come down quickly. He said, because today I must abide at thy house. I'm going to come spend the night with you, you chief of all the publicans. And he made haste and came down. Verse 7, and when they saw it, the Pharisees and the other Jews, they all murmured, saying that he was going to be the guest with a man that is a sinner. And the Lord went and blessed Zacchaeus that day in his house, stayed with him and said, today salvation comes to you. Go back to Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter 15, verse 1. Then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners to hear him. And the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, this man receiveth sinners and eat with them. How did Jesus treat the Gentiles, the heathens, and the publicans? He treated them with great grace. He helped them. Upheld their problems, came and spent the night with him. He ate with him. Let's go back and look at this verse now. Jesus says, if he doesn't listen to you and doesn't listen to you and your witnesses, and then he doesn't listen to the church, he said, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. He's not saying banish him from the church. That's what the Jews would have done. That's not what Jesus says do. Treat him like a heathen as I would treat him, and treat him like a publican, as I treat the publicans. He said, if he's offended you, try everything that we've given you here. Go see him, take witnesses, go to church. Then if he doesn't, leave him alone. Don't press the issue, but be graceful to him. Be kind to him. Dine with him. Show him by example that you can turn the other cheek. When you can help him, you go help him. Let him come to you then. If you'll treat him by the example of the way Jesus treated the Pharisees and the Gentiles, they were following them after a while. The people that the Jewish people despised and banished, Jesus found ways to bring them into and help them when he could. Showed grace upon them and showed mercy upon them. We have a beautiful example here of how we're to handle personal conflicts between our fellow man. It's not one that we go over to win the argument. It's not one we go over to put them down and show them how wrong they are. We go to win a brother. And we to follow these steps that's given out to us to win a brother. We take it to the church. The church is to help us try to convince him. Church is not to invoke discipline on him. This is still between me and him. The church helps referee. Then it's back to me following the scripture. I treat him like a publican and a Gentile or heathen. I'm nice to him. I'm kind to him. I turn the other cheek. I forgive him. I've got this dispute that he's not going to resolve and he's not going to apologize. I'm going to forgive him. Just like it follows immediately when Peter says, but what do I do when someone keeps offending me? He said, you forgive. And you don't only forgive once, you forgive 70 times 7. You're forgiving. In doing that, that's the way you still gain a brother. That's the way you still win someone over to your side. The goal is not to kick somebody out of the church. The goal is not to be a fight somebody, to show somebody up. The goal is to gain a brother. And that ought to be our goal too. You've been very kind to me with your attention. My prayers, the Lord will richly bless you. Come ahead, Brother Kenny.